Okay, once again, it's great to be back with another fellow artist brother. Who are you, sir?
My name is Daniel Shapiro.
What particular department of art do you express in?
A lot of what I'm doing right now is traditional illustration, using anywhere from a variety of pen and ink to even Copic art markers, even a little bit of gouache and watercolor.
When did you decide that this art form was the platform that would help you best express yourself?
This was probably somewhere around middle school when I discovered my love for comics. If you want to boil down my work a little bit even further, I'm a comic book artist. I'm a penciler, I'm an inker, I'm a little bit of a colorist, but I'm also a storyteller as well.
Who or what set you on this path?
It's not so much a what for my particular case, it's much more of a who. And all credit goes to my big brother Mario. He had a huge collection that I poured through when I was six, back when I had Superman Underoos, all that good stuff. Yeah, I had all this stuff and I didn't realize all the stories that these characters represented. So my brother was like, here. And he just passed me a little stack of Spider-Man synopses, classic stories that my brother had since he was in middle school himself. So here I am, I'm like 5, 6, 7 years old, and my big brother just passing me a stack of Spider-Man collections. And these are collections that have close to about, I would say, about 40 pages of just straight text. So I was already a good reader. I was just reading a lot of these storylines of different major chapters in Spider-Man's history. The X-Men, all these other great stories that really just inform my imagination and sense of fantasy.
What is your educational background around your art? Did you self-study? Did you have a personal trainer? Did you have professional training? Did you go to school?
I started drawing, according to some people, depending on who you ask outside of this interview, I started drawing sometime around 2 or 3 when I picked up a crayon and drew on my mom's phone book.
The Genesis, yeah, of
That was
course.
my origin story. That was my origin story. I picked up a crayon and my mom noticed that, hey, I wasn't drawing on the walls. So she didn't make much of an effort to stop me. My father made efforts to give me different pens and pencils that he found at the office where he worked. And my mom had extra copier paper and printer paper at her office. So I always had a little something, something to keep myself busy. So as far as like my education, to answer your question a little bit more directly, I went to Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. This was on the recommendation of my art teacher, who was one of my other big creative influences. He broadened a lot of my horizons as far as like, okay, you can use a pencil to draw a character, but you can also use a pencil to shade a building and draw furniture and backgrounds and cars and weapons and tools that some of these characters you may want them to use as part of your stories. So, as far as my art education in Brooklyn, a lot of what I learned was along the lines of color theory and rendering.
What personal value do you get out of working in these art forms?
It is my heart. To put it bluntly, it is my heart because right now, at this particular point in my career, art doesn't pay all the bills just yet. I have stuff to get my daily bread, and then I have stuff to feed my heart. Some people who live in the Bronx, they understand the struggle, and the struggle is no more real than if you are in the hood trying to work your way out of the hood by any means constructively.
What value do others receive from your art? Do you teach? Do you have a business? Is it something that's strictly personal?
I'm largely on call doing freelance because most of the stuff that I'm doing is still mostly for myself, just trying to figure out my own story to tell. But if anybody has a character idea that they've worked on, they can't quite get their head wrapped around, I can actually tap into that instinct that they can't quite articulate, and I'll put it on paper. That actually helped me get some work as a production designer on an independent film that you can actually find on YouTube, and it got shown in Cannes.
What is something about your art form that you know, but perhaps people don't know what they should know?
It takes more patience than anybody's willing to invest. It's going to take patience to get good. It takes sacrifice to get good. If you want to get good at whatever it is that you want to do, like let's say you want to be a filmmaker, you got to get good at filmmaking. You have to be able to actually look at the frame and find a story in whatever perspective you're trying to look at. That means you're going to have to take time away from doing dumb things with people that all they want to do is make your time and attention all about what they want. So it helps to be an introvert in some cases, or if you are a natural born extrovert for some people, then it takes a little bit more discipline and focus to really get good at bringing value to the kind of work that you want to make. Some would say it's practice. Some would say it's an obsession. Some would say it's a compulsion. Some would say it's a disorder. It's a passion. If you love the process, the product will figure itself out. It's my perspective that we live in a culture, not in a society, not in a world, or no, we live in a culture. A culture of individuals where everybody has an opinion and nobody has all the facts. And on top of that, it's been my observation as a guy that's probably kissing 40 next year, that there's a business model in telling you, you ain't jack spit. You ain't spit. You ain't going to be spit. Your father ain't spit. Your mother ain't spit. I ain't spit. So you ain't going to amount to nothing else more than spit. And I say, you know what? Forget you.
What are some physical or mental boundaries that you cross to access your best art space or your zone?
In order to get the best out of myself, I have to keep reminding myself as some sort of like mantra, finished, not perfect. A lot of people, especially these days, a lot of people have an opinion on what they want to do, but they don't have all the facts. You're not going to get all the facts until you actually put something down first. Once you put it down first, then you can actually figure out, okay, how can I push this further? Like one of the techniques that actually helped me on a physical creative level is, okay, let me hold my work up to a mirror. That means I'm not looking at it the way I created it. I'm looking at it as now a collection of elements. That's how, if I was going to do a portrait of, say, you, for example, I have what I think I'm looking at, and then when I hold up to a mirror, that's when I'm going to say, oh, wait, I got this man's eye wrong. I got his smile wrong. Brother, I think I got a little bit of his teeth wrong. Shoot, I gotta fix that. And that's how you get good. You have to be able to look at your own material from an outside perspective or from a different way altogether, so that way you can get good. But eventually, it's gonna have to get finished.
Do you have any physical boundaries?
I can't work at home, because in my head, home is where I relax. Home is where I turn off my brain. Home is where I can indulge in my recreation, my chance to really laugh, enjoy content from other creators.
What are some lines that you will not cross?
I'd rather keep it PG-13, maybe a light R. If you want to go with, as far as like violence, I don't do nudity all that much, unless it's specifically for my own educational purposes. Like, okay, let's say if I'm going to try to draw a woman, like one of the first things I did when I was in art school was that I had to draw a new model. Oh, wow. I never did anything like that before. So whatever expectations the dudes had in our class were completely dashed away when the model turned out to be a very, very well-endowed woman who happened to be a little bit on the overweight side. So whatever expectations we thought we had about what we were comfortable with and what we were not comfortable with, that all went right out the window because our teacher said, okay, draw that. Make sure you have every angle of her shoulders right. Make sure you have the way her ears are. Make sure you have her shoulders, elbows, all those proportions right. Don't draw what you're looking at. Draw what you see.
So nudity is your cutoff point?
As far as like commissions, yeah. There's also some fetish content that I would strictly avoid because, well, I'm also a family man. I have nieces and a nephew that I also don't want to get the wrong idea about the stuff that I do. And they don't see that work on my Instagram. They don't see any of that on any of my sketchbooks because I show it all to my family. If I can't show it off to my family, it's not worth indulging in.
What role does the current state of our world play in influencing your art?
I've made my own decisions. I don't follow the current zeitgeist of what's on Twitter, what's on Facebook, what is the living hairpiece doing as far as like foreign policy. I don't care about any of that because that's not in my lane. I'm not here to change the world. I'm here to make the world a little bit prettier for myself. And if you happen to like the stuff that I'm working on, that's even better.
Have there been any significant changes in your field of art expression that, in your personal opinion, have either helped or hindered the art form?
I can't say that there's been a big paradigm shift when I was coming up in the hood that completely changed the game. And it was actually, it's the medium that we're using right now to communicate with the world, the internet. Also, in no uncertain terms, let me be crystal clear about this right now. there are going to be people older than me that are going to be raging against the current state of affairs because these damn millennials and their social medias and whatnot. Guess what? This cell phone that I have in my hand and that you had in your pocket, this is to the TV as the TV was to the radio. And if you really think about it, all those old radio shows were podcasts before they were cool. This cell phone that I have in my hand is a new paradigm shift. I control all the stuff that I put out there. I'm a media company now. According to the rules of the internet, as I understand it, I'm a media company. So are you. That means content is king, perspective is emperor. If you have the right perspective on your own content, you're always going to rule.
That being said, what are some tools, either technology or material, that help you best express your art?
One of my favorites that I like to use is a 4H lead, which is actually a little bit harder than the old pencils that you would have to use in school to do your Scantron sheets. I use a pencil that's actually harder than that, so it makes an even lighter line. This allows me to make mistakes and correct even easier. I also, just to challenge myself, I'll do an entire piece on a ballpoint pen if I feel like it. I can actually show you some of that.
I would love to see it all, obviously. Mm-hmm. And the people who are listening, or rather who are going to be listening to this interview, mm-hmm. they are going to see it too when I post it.
If you're limited by your budget, then take that budget and push it to the ends of the earth. Like, let's say if you have an image in your heart and all you have is a ballpoint pen, then you're going to take that ballpoint pen, you're going to use it till the very last drop of ink in the reservoir. If all you have is a broken crayon from your sister's collection and you have an image in your heart and you have a truth that you figured out, you're going to use that crayon for every last bit you have because your truth is going to add to the world's understanding. However way you can communicate it, because your truth does not change. Once you discover your truth, that doesn't change. Let's say you're not too comfortable with drawing like I am, or using a camera like some people are. You can still talk. You can still write poetry. And there are some people that are going to be in your audience reading this article right now, looking at my stuff. They might even have some storylines in their heads that they weren't brave enough to put down the paper. If you have a story and you have a truth, put it down somehow, some way, and then share it. Don't care about the response. If it's your truth, it's your truth. Put it out there because that's your legacy. Regardless of technique, you can get good later as long as you put in the time, put in the patience, put in the effort to get good. But get it down first. Put it in paper. Commit to something. Make a decision on your creativity.
What are some personal habits that you employ to successfully support your artistic expression?
I do my best to post my material in a way that tries to foster a conversation. I want people to talk about what it is that I'm working on. If it's a character in the story, I would like people to ask about the character or ask about the story that this was about, because that's what illustration is. It's a flat picture that's meant to convey a story. The story can mean different things to different people, and that's where we all learn. Let's say you're in the train, you're in the D train heading back home, and you're looking at an advertisement, and all you see is a girl holding a little product with a smile. What's she smiling about? Guess what? That's a story that you can learn about.
Can you share with us an event in your life, either personal or artistic, that has caused you to question what you were doing? Maybe an instance where a project didn't work out and you took a real serious hit to your confidence, and maybe you questioned, should I continue on this artistic path? You know, should I just quit? You know, what am I really doing?
For the past, let's see, it's 2017 at the time of this recording. I've been working on and off on my own personal story since sometime in the turn of the millennium. And this is a story that I've had wavering confidence in, but I've always put down stuff here and there as inspiration struck me. And I shared this with a friend of mine who was very encouraging because he had his own stuff that he was working on for just as long. And the thing about our stories was that one story dovetailed into the other and back again. So it's kind of like our stories were our own individual stories, but they kind of worked together in what people would like to now use the overused term of a shared universe. But back in December 31st, 2016, I learned that my friend passed away from pneumonia, and his stuff will likely never see the light of day. That person's story was part of the inspiration, but that person was the main fountain of inspiration because that was my friend, and I'll never get a chance to say goodbye to him in the way that I was comfortable with. So I had to retool my story to go on without him, and I'm pretty sure he would say, D, I love you like a brother, but keep moving. Don't stop. Nobody's looking at you right now. That means they'll never see you coming. I think that's the best advice I could probably give somebody. Nobody's looking at you right now. You know what? Don't sweat it. Don't worry about it. They'll never see you come if you keep working. They'll never see you coming.
Okay, I am going to mentally bookmark that and hire someone to just make a mosaic of those letters. And Dan is pointing to himself right now. Like,
I do graphic.
Probably hire him.
I do graphic design too.
Graphic design too. This guy's a Renaissance man over here.
It's one of my goals. But keep working. Don't worry about the attention. Really, don't worry about the attention. You just keep doing you the best way you can do you. They're not looking at you right now. They don't care about you. The market doesn't care about your feelings. If you're hurting inside, they don't care because that's going to inform your truth. You put that on paper. You put that into song. You put that into your poetry book. You put that into whatever musical instrument you have. You put that into the lens of your camera. You put that truth however way you have available in your own two hands, and you share that with the world as constructively as possible. And guess what? They'll never see you coming.
What project recently completed or completed in the past that you are most proud of? Can you share with us a project like that?
Yes, I can. This goes out to my friend Ernie because I'm going to be sending him this because he was a part of this story too. A lot of the people that I meet in my travels become part of my story and part of my stories.
As they should.
As they should, because that's how art works. That's how creativity works. The people, it's not what you know and it's not who you know. That's a lie. It's who knows you. If you are the same warm, genuine, authentic person you are as part of your truth, you just keep doing you. They'll never see you coming. Now, to get back to the story, it was back in 04, 05. I was in between jobs, so I took a part-time gig at Sam Ash in 48th Street, Music Alley. I was a little bit of a musician in high school. I played saxophone, so I knew my way around. I met a filmmaker who was also doing customer service. We started talking about films that inspired us and how the films that we were into, nobody was really watching. Fancy that. But I saw them coming. Nobody saw people like Akira Kurosawa, the guy who made The Seven Samurai, which became The Magnificent Seven, which now got remixed with Denzel, another hero of ours.
Right. Well, it's Denzel.
It's Denzel. Come on. In fact, when it came to Denzel movies, on a scale of 1 to Training Day, how many Denzels out of 10? But believe me, we could talk about that. But what happened was we became friends. We became friends before we became partners. So what happened was he knew my stuff. He knew the story that I wanted to tell. And he was the first one to tell me, brother, this is not a story that you're telling. I'm looking at the stuff that you have here and the outline that you have for your story. This is not a story. This is a mythology. I was completely blown away when he said that because that was a new word that I wasn't really aware of that I was capable of. That means it's a story that happens on a long enough timeline that people can come back to and still build from.
Harry Potter, for example.
Bingo. Exactly. Harry Potter. That's a mythology that spanned what's supposed to be 6 movies, but they decided to make 7 because, well, you gotta make that money. But another great mythology was X-Men. Anybody who's reading your article right now or looking at the stuff that you're putting on, they're gonna know. But getting back on task, he showed me a story that he was working on. He actually had the courage to share with me part of the truth that informed his story. I was looking at his outline, and I just said flat out, as plain as day as I'm talking to you right now, in fact, same distance, we got a movie here. What do you want to do with it? Now, let me explain to some people what a production designer does. It's more than just being an art director. An art director decides how the thing looks in front of the camera. And they work with the actual director on the colors and the lighting and stuff like that. The production designer builds the world in front of the camera. It's my job as a production designer to pick the director's brain for every last bit of storytelling content and say, okay, what do you want to do with this character story and has this character story informed the plot that you already wrote. what part of this person's, this character's story matters in front of the camera? How can I show that off for you and for your audience? That's basically what a production designer does. I build the world. Whatever questions you may have had about, say, Harry Potter after the movie that you already made sense in your own head, that means the production designer already did their job well. Because if you're already answering your question like, okay, that looked like it made sense. Like the person's pulling out a wand and they're crafting a spell and there's consequences and it looks and feels realistic within its own rule set. That's what a production designer does.
What is the lasting impact from working on that most memorable project?
That's now a new medium that I want to get involved in. It turns out I have a real knack for listening to other people's truths and bringing it out. To anybody who's listening right now or reading the article that's going to come out, you have a story. You have a truth. What do you want to do with it? Holler at your boy. See what we can work on.
It's been said that a fanatic redoubles his efforts while losing sight of his goals. What are some telltale signs that a project is past its prime, that maybe time to give it up, maybe switch tracks? What point did you get the hint that it may be time to go in another direction?
When it's time to work on a different direction, that means it's already done. That means I have to make a decision for myself that it's finished. I don't care if it's perfect anymore. I had to train myself over years to say, okay, it doesn't have to be perfect because there could be another friend that you can collaborate with that can get it to perfect with you. And you don't have to lay your hands on it any further. This is how you know when your part of the thing is done. Let's say you're working on a movie and the only thing you are good at, because it takes everything, every answer here starts with self-awareness. You have to know what you are good at and you have to know your truth and know your medium. Get good enough to know all that. So let's say you're working on a really ambitious project. You're working on a film. You're working on a fan film of all things. You know how crazy those things do on YouTube. They make gangbusters when they're done well. But every last person in the credits of those fan films, they're probably only good at only one thing. And you know what? That's beautiful. Because the real magic is not the film that you're looking at. It's the fact that they all work together and they didn't get in each other's way. Let's say you have one person who's really good at making costumes and you have a lot of people on Instagram who model their cosplaying skills for the whole world to see because this is stuff that they put time and effort and patience to get good at. And let's say you have people on Instagram or Twitter or Snapchat that they're able to take these filters and actually use them to make stories. You basically have a filmmaker without the crew. Look at Robert Rodriguez. He wrote a book on how to make a film without a crew. He gave us Desperado. He gave us El Mariachi.
Machete.
He gave us El Machete. He also gave us Sharkboy and Lovegirl.
Moving on. What project are you working on at this moment that you would like people to know about?
I'm going to start sharing a little bit of my story with other people. So you're probably going to hear about this first. It's a story that, I've been working on since 01 or so, and I actually shared this with my friend who passed away, but I'm pretty sure he wants me to keep going because once it's done, people are not going to see it coming. And it's a story about a war that finally ends, and this is a war that has spanned an entire millennium, 1,000 years war that has come down to the last two warriors on the battlefield. One from the very beginning of the war who has survived 1,000 years, and one at the very end of the timeline who's the last of his generation, and they're going to meet and do battle. That's just the setup. Each character has their own story that I will also want to share with people.
Do you consider imitation to be a form of flattery?
That's a layered question, and I like it. I respect it. I admire that. Because a lot of what I do is also love letters to the things that inspire me. So if someone were to actually take inspiration from how I do a certain character or how I put a little bit of sensitivity to a person's story and the way I draw an illustration and actually get credited for it, like, yo, I actually learned how to do this from looking at what you did and how you did it, then I just taught you something. We just learned something together. You know what? I actually take that as a little bit of flattery.
What's the biggest competitive aspect of your art form?
Other people who are just as good as I am for the same reasons.
What are your top three distractions?
Perfectionism, as I think I've covered before. My own sense of my own monstrous urge to keep noodling at it and not share it. I also tend to create more than I document. So a lot of the stuff that you're going to be seeing in my Instagram are finished pieces, which is good, but I don't make enough of an effort to let people in on how I create my stuff. I want to show that to the people because that's something that's been limiting me. And finally, budget. I'm still a poor boy from the hood. I can't really afford to get all these, you know, all these technical gadgets, but I don't have to. That's one thing I had to keep reminding myself. I don't have to.
That's correct.
Because
you've got the talent.
The funny thing is, talent, you can't control, because that comes naturally. You can't control nature. Any attempt to control what comes naturally is going to meet with nothing but bloody disaster. Here's the thing that a lot of other cats don't want to admit to themselves. Hustle beats talent. Here's why. You can always control how hard you are willing to work. Like another friend of mine, he always said that I'm the better artist, which I take that with a grain of salt, because he's the one that has a different way of thinking about things that I can still learn from. And I respect that. I admire that. However, he stopped drawing for one reason or another. He just put down the pencil, was like, you know what? I'm done. He didn't stop being creative. He just stopped drawing. I didn't stop drawing. I didn't stop creating in the medium that I know I'm good at.
What are your top three energy boosters?
This one's tough. Energy boosters. For me, it's actually one of my biggest sources of inspiration that a lot of people are starting to get back into over the past decades is Dungeons & Dragons. It's the whole experience of being able to sit at a table with a storyteller and the talent. And by talent, I'm using as a technical term for like movie making. There's the storyteller who's basically the director and all the extras. And guess what? You guys get to play hero. You can try anything, but ultimately the dice determine whether or not it's going to work. And then you have to take that ball and run with it to the next storytelling point. It's improvisational storytelling in a way that video games cannot replicate and cannot duplicate. Because that social interaction and that social contract of storytelling, like, okay, let's say I'm the storyteller and you're the player. What I say, basically, I'm refereeing your decisions. You can try anything you want. You want to try to pull a gun and, you know, kill the bad guy, kill the dragon with a gun? Well, according to the rules of my story, do you have a gun in your pocket? No, all you have is a sword. And you're going up against a dragon. What do you do from there, brother? Another thing that Dungeons & Dragons teaches that a lot of video games don't, you have to make decisions. I've been making decisions in my life once I learned how to play Dungeons & Dragons, and I learned how to play that ever since middle school. So I've been making decisions with my life since middle school, for better or for worse.
What's your other two?
Definitely comics, because one of the things that I like to do is redo a story that I didn't like. For example, a lot of the people who are fans of Spider-Man, if you listen to them long enough, they're probably going to eventually tell you about the problems that they have with a storyline called One More Day. And I'm not going to get into the details about the story, but the main problem that people had was that Peter Parker made a deal with the devil so that way he can save his aunt who was in danger. I wasn't happy with that decision, so I wrote something different. Final one. Every bit of advice that you're going to hear, no matter how well-intentioned, they don't understand your challenges the way you understand your challenges. It all starts with self-awareness. Basically, you have to give yourself a reality check, and that is something that I love to do. I like to give myself a reality check whenever I'm getting advice that kind of rubs me the wrong way. Like, okay, you want me to do what? Wait a minute, am I looking at the situation for what it is or for what I believe it to be? Because what you believe and what proves to be true are two totally different things. Everybody has an opinion. Nobody has all the facts. Get the facts.
What advice do you recommend to someone who is just getting started?
Know yourself. Know what you're about. Know your medium. Don't worry about what people are going to tell you you're not good at. Don't worry about that. Focus on what you're good at. Let's say you're a better artist than you are a writer. Let's say you have a better creative instinct for the camera. You can be on the camera. Or maybe you get nervous in front of the camera. You get hurt with so much stage fright that you can't be in front of the camera. I'm actually kind of like that. I don't like being in front of the camera. However, I like being behind the camera, and I like to build things behind the scenes. That's me knowing myself. You have to know yourself, know your medium, and know your truth. Those three things. From there, put your nose to the grindstone and just keep working.
And finally, where can people find your work and, of course, connect with you?
You can reach me at Facebook. I have my own page for The Art of Night Slayer Dan. I also have a Twitter feed, which is at Night Slayer Dan, one word. On Instagram, you can reach me at Night_Dan.
All right, Dan, it was a pleasure having you.
It was a pleasure, honor, and a privilege to be here, man.
Thank you very much. Once again, this was Lloyd Bison.